quarters. But wouldn't it be nice if the on-air portion of the pledge drive were a bit shorter? With your online gift, you can help shorten the on-air drive so we can get you back to the KPFT programming you enjoy. Pre-pledge securely online at kpft.org so that we have it in hand in time to create the final on-air schedule. And thank you again for your continued support of 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 8 p.m. on a Thursday, and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and storytelling, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio. Well, I'm your host tonight, Eric Keen, along with co-host Dr. Michael Winters. Michael's been a guest on this show many times, but I think this is his first time as a host. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great, Eric, and it is my first time as a host, and so I'm really glad that you invited me in for this.
And Michael and I are backed up by the talented team of Drs. Hank Rubicek, Warren Holloman, and Mary Edgerton, as well as Greg Audell, Harwood Taylor, Chrissy Gorman, and Tatiana Gago. And here we celebrate the power of story. We do this by placing the spotlight on guests who will take us on magical journeys through their imaginations. Well, for most of us, the pandemic has been a great inconvenience, but some people have jobs that put them more on the front lines of this challenge. And tonight, we're going to hear stories from some of these people. Our guests include folks involved in things like medical care, teachers, law enforcement, and animal rescue. Sometimes we take them for granted, but these people have really stepped up to meet the challenges of the pandemic, and we'll be hearing their stories tonight.
You know, Eric, I think this is really an important topic, because most of us, you know, really see the downside of the pandemic, and obviously it really is. It's impacted everybody's life all over the world in a negative way. But it also means that there is an opportunity for people to be at their best. And I think that's what we're going to hear tonight. People really showing up and bringing, you know, the best qualities of humanity to a very difficult situation. So I'm really excited about getting into these stories.
Yeah, me too.
Every challenge we have ever experienced as a human race is made better when we bring our best human qualities to it. Doesn't mean it goes away, but we can survive it together or manage it together when we bring our best. And that's what I'm really excited to hear tonight.
Totally agree.
Our first guest tonight is Jo Sullivan. And she brings twin passions, a passion for theater that she's been doing throughout her life, and a passion for pets and animals and combining them. So she is both an improviser, but she works professionally for the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals here in Houston as the Chief Community and Development Officer, which means that she gets to do some things like fundraising, but what she really loves is bringing pets and people together and developing new programs for that. And she has some very, very interesting stories. So welcome, Jo. Glad to have you on So What's Your Story?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Well, I would say, you know, we've talked some before we got on the air about your stories. I'm really excited to hear them. So let's dive in and hear your story.
Absolutely. So the first story I'm going to talk about is how the Houston SPCA found itself relevant in what we all considered a very human crisis. A little over a year ago, as the world shut down in the time of COVID, no one knew what was going to happen. Many of us didn't understand where our next hug would come from. Many of us didn't know when we could go out in public again without a mask, when we were going to see family again or travel. And as the human side of this tragedy began to unfold and the pandemic began to take hold, we knew at Houston SPCA that we had a place and a voice, but we weren't sure where yet. Like many companies at the time when we were declared stay home, work safe with Judge Hidalgo, we emptied our shelter. We grabbed every foster family that we could and many adopters, and we found ourselves for the first time walking empty floors. The kennels were silent. There was nothing there, none of the life and the love and the joy of watching a small child run up and down by the cat rooms and trying to pick out their next family member. But we didn't stop bringing in animals in need. Our investigations continued. Our ambulance service continued. So pets were coming to us. And in many cases, the most broken of those pets. They were injured. They suffered from animal cruelty. There was always a challenge in front of us. And we knew, aside from the work that we did every single day, that we wanted to be of service to the people that couldn't leave their homes. So we reached out to partner with an organization here in town called Baker Ripley. And we thought, why not? Two icons in Houston, the Houston SPCA and Baker Ripley. And we started talking to their senior program leaders about what their seniors were feeling. These are people that were vibrant and active in the community. This is not the great grandmother that isn't able to leave her home. These seniors were still driving and active in civic clubs. And they found themselves isolated at home. In many cases, they chose not to even go out and get their own groceries because they were so concerned about the pandemic and infection. And they were lonely and they were depressed, maybe suicidal. Their mental health was deteriorating. And we knew that being able to connect these seniors with a pet was an answer. We see this so much. Any of you listening that have pets in your home, you know what it's like when the day is just crappy and you come home to whatever, your cat, your dog, your fish, and you find such joy in that pet and you find sustenance in that animal. But the challenge was, how do we get these pets to the seniors? So we created this elaborate delivery program, socially distanced. We were wearing masks. We were going to, you know, put the cat in a carrier. We would also deliver it with food and supplies. So we fixed that part. Then the next question was, what pets? I don't know if you're anything like me, when you choose to bring a new member into the family, it's got to be somebody that you've selected. So we had this great idea that we'd have all the seniors in the program log into one giant Zoom meeting and find their perfect cat. We fell very short. Let me assure you, that was not going to happen. First of all, trying to get 50 people with cell phones on 50 different cats with 50 different seniors, it was a complete disaster. I'll acknowledge later in the pandemic, we would have all probably gotten a lot better at it. But these were the early days when I still didn't know my Zoom login from a hole in the ground. So what we ended up doing was assigning a person on our team to a senior. And that person would call the senior and interview them. And they would listen. And they heard what the senior wanted, a playful cat, an older cat. And they would go through our cats that we had in our shelter system. And they would pick a few that made sense. And we'd take photographs and small videos. And we'd share back and forth, sometimes text messages, sometimes Zoom. And then the selection was finally made. And there's the first cat we ever delivered to an amazing senior here in Houston, Mrs. Fields. I'll never forget that moment. We all packed up on a really rainy day. It was close to Christmas, so we dressed in elf costumes and glitter masks, and we decorated ourselves from top to bottom, and we looked the part, and we showed up on her porch on this very rainy day, and we watched the senior who had been isolated from friends and family for months, who had only been delivered her meals at safe distance. The delivery person set the meals down and had to be in the car before she was even able to go out to her front porch and pick it up. But we got to get 6 feet of close, and we sat the cat down and we stepped back, and she stepped up and she looked down and saw O'Malley in his cage and the squeals of delight and love and pure joy and affection. I get cold chills just hearing about it now. And there were other adoptions, and we are still evolving this program as the pandemic is ending. But I know for certain, in that one moment, we connected a human being with a new family member, and we made a difference in both of their lives that we hope will last a lifetime.
That's amazing story, Joe. I love that. That is just so, so powerful. I have a new respect for SPCA. I just thought, oh, yeah, they do this. But, you know, just to hear how the organization and all of the work that went into that really, you know, as you said, brought a new family member to somebody who was isolated and now has a family member who also was in need of somebody to love.
Absolutely. Without question, I believe that it's easy to think of pet adoption. Many of us that have pets, that's the way we've chosen to adopt our animals. But if you take a step back and really think of that mental health and the happiness that that pet brings you, we believe that going to extra lengths to make those relationships happen, it makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. And we're very honored to be able to serve in that way. We served on a much broader way as well, as economics began to get tougher here and people were losing their job. Many of my friends that are in the restaurant business, hotel business, and they were being laid off and furloughed, and they weren't sure where their next paycheck was coming from. Again, imagine having to look at all of your family and think, I'm not going to be able to keep my dog. I can't afford to feed him or her. And it's not a choice at some point in time. You have a limited number of dollars. You're out of a job. You're in the middle of a pandemic. There is nowhere else to go for resources. And you're at that point where you think, my pet is going to have to go to a shelter or a rescue group. I have to do the right thing for my pet, but I cannot keep it. And we started working with both Harris County. We worked with Precinct 1 and we worked with Houston PD Police Department. And we asked them, how are you helping your residents and your neighborhoods by your precincts prepare for or to combat what's happening economically here in Houston? And one of the ideas that we came up with that we could help with, what could we do, right? We ask ourselves again as Houston SPCA, what can we possibly do? We don't have huge grant dollars. We can't pay for rent. What we could do is provide food. And if you have pet food in your home, so that if you are able to get Meals on Wheels or you are able to get subsidized food programs for a period of time, you're not sharing your food with that pet. You're taking care of yourself and your family, and you can keep your pet as well. So we created a series of food delivery programs. We went into the communities. We've done two, one in the southeast, one very close to Acres Homes. We're coming up on another one on April 21st, which I think maybe just after this airs, in the northwest quadrant. And then we will do another with Precinct 1 in May. And in each one of these deliveries, we're giving out over 5,000 pounds of pet food, and we break it up in two-week units, so that each person that comes up into this drive-through, again, socially distanced with masks and very careful, will load your back seat, all that good stuff that we're all supposed to do now, but you are provided 2 weeks worth of food for your pets. And even that on the surface sounds a little transactional. Drive up, tell me how many cats you have, open your back door, and the food goes and off. What I found inspiring and tear-jerking and moving was that most everybody that drove up had their cell phone ready to show us pictures of their pets, and they named them, and they told us stories about where they were adopted or where they were found on the streets or how they were rescued. This was more than just being able to drive through and pick up some free stuff. This was a moment that a family member got help, and a family member that usually doesn't get a lot of attention in the middle of a crisis. And we were able to meet these folks in the community and get to know their animals through the pictures. And in some cases, they brought them with them in their vehicles. And we talked to people who took care of feral cat colonies and hadn't been able to feed those colonies for periods of time because they'd been out of work. Even that small gesture to be able to help 300 cars the first day, close to 500 cars the next, and we anticipate the same going forward. You wouldn't imagine that an animal welfare group standing beside Houston Police Department safely putting food in the back seat of a car would be brought to tears by the person that drives up in tears and showing us a picture of her three cats and saying, without you, they would eat, but I wouldn't. And now I have a chance to eat this week. Mm. I don't know how much more powerful that can be. And it shows you again, the importance of pets in people's lives.
I'm wondering if there's, you know, something that you would like to leave our listeners with, if there's something, you know, that this has maybe taught you a particular lesson or something that you'd just like them to remember about your experiences.
Oh gosh, there's so many things. I think if I had to leave behind one thing, it's the look in the eyes of that wonderful woman who expressed that she got to eat that week. And I realized that the smallest gestures, you truly, truly never know. There was a person who was passionate about our organization and felt they didn't have much to contribute. They didn't have a lot of money. They had all the pets they could have in their home and they couldn't adopt. So they made us face masks, and all of our face masks had pet themes from pet fabric. You have no idea the joy that brought all of us standing in the middle of crisis and chaos to look through this bag of masks and get to pick the cat or the dog one that meant something to us. So I would say, don't ever discount your talents. Don't ever discount your ability to help. No matter how small or how large, there is always something, even if it's just writing a note and leaving it in a neighbor's mailbox to say you're thinking about them. Right now in this world, something that small means everything.
Well, Joe, this is, I mean, just really amazing stories, amazing energy that you bring and your other folks bring. I mean, creativity and energy to be able to do this. That's just great. But before we conclude, is there anybody you want to just say hi to? Anybody, any shout outs you want to give out there in Radio Land?
Oh my gosh, so many in Radio Land. How are you doing this to me now? So many. You know who I really would? Jessica and the team at Station Theater, who have also been stalwart in their commitment to bring improv back, to bring performance and laughter back. I just had lunch with Jessica. It was the first time we'd seen each other. We're both fully vaccinated. That hug meant everything. So Jessica Brown and that entire team at Station Theater for holding tight to that location and not letting that go, even though it was closed. We know they will open up again and we will all have a chance to go back for joy and laughter. So Basic Plus Plus, that's my troop, my improv troop. So the Basic Plus Plus guys, the Station Theater guys, every troupe I've ever seen perform there, thank you for holding on to hope while we get back to whatever normal may look like.
Well, Joe Sullivan, wonderful stories, a wonderful organization, SPCA. Thank you for participating and sharing your stories with us here at So What's Your Story.
Such an honor to be involved. This is one of my favorite programs, favorite radio stations. It's just an honor. Thank you.
Well, our next guest has been on our show several times, and we love having her here. Dr. Ruth Locker-Wentz. Ruth is a nephrologist in the Texas Medical Center, and she's also an established storyteller. In addition to being on our program, she's told some great stories at the Moth and other venues. Ruth, it's great having you back here on So What's Your Story?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Eric. It's always so much fun.
Now, tonight, Ruth, we're spotlighting people who are on the front lines in this battle against COVID. And that, of course, includes doctors such as yourself. How has this pandemic affected your work?
Well, I think for us, as for so many people through the pandemic, there have been all the feels. It's gone from times of gratitude to terror, deep sorrow, anger, so many emotions. And I'm going to take you all through some of that roller coaster with my story.
Yeah, this story you prepared for us, I think it tackles head on two of the most pressing issues facing the world right now. The pandemic, of course, and also social justice. So let's hear your story.
Thank you. Well, my first memories of the pandemic were my mother buying masks on the internet and sending them to us in January of 2020. I had told her that she was being ridiculous and that these viruses like SARS, MERS, and Ebola came and went without affecting us. But as usual, my mother was right, unfortunately. By March, the first cases of COVID had been diagnosed in Southwest Houston in persons returning from travel abroad. When I heard that those patients were transferring to my hospital in the medical center, I was terrified. I've always been strictly book smart and rather uncoordinated, and this is not helpful when it is believed that the main occupational hazard was errors in donning and doffing of PPE. What that means is if you accidentally reverse the order of taking off your gown or your glove or your shield and you touch contaminate your face with virus, then game over. And a lot of doctors stopped coming to the hospital then. I'm sure they had their reasons. Most people have someone immunocompromised in their inner circles, such as with diabetes or extremes of age. It wasn't always who you might think, too, that stopped coming. Some were healthy men in their prime, and they arranged for other doctors to see their patients rather than physically go into the hospitals. But medicine is a profession. It's not something you do just when it's convenient. My good friend and former classmate, Dr. Victor Narcisse, said it best. He said, "This is our war. This is what we've been trained to do, and it's time for us to step up and serve." He told me that he was proud of me for not running away. And although I was anxious, I tried to use reason and humor to keep calm. I was a Jewish mother descended from a long line of Jewish mothers. If this was a battle to be won by being a germaphobe and washing hands, then my childhood was akin to Wonder Woman training on the island of the Amazons. I could do this. So we ushered in a new era of medicine in 2020. No longer did we get up in the morning and shower, putting on coordinated blouses and trousers with a low heel, conservative makeup and jewelry to look professional. Instead, the hospital gave us lectures on how to dress and behave to maximize infection control. No white coats or ties that could carry germs from patient to patient. Instead, we wore scrubs with bare arms from the elbows down and tennis shoes that stayed in the garage rather than potentially tracking virus into our homes. We covered our hair with bonnets and our faces with tight N95s that would leave grooves at the end of the day and put a plastic shield over it all. I would carry my rations for the day, such as a thermos of water and a sack lunch, on my back. I had gone from my Harris County Medical Society picture with scarf and pearls to looking more like Sigourney Weaver in Alien. And at the end of the day, there was the decontamination phase. Wipes were used to disinfect the seat of the car, the steering wheel, the door handles. Clothes were torn off in the laundry room and put in the wash on hot before streaking to the shower for a Silkwood-worthy scrub. Kids were rebuffed. "Don't hug mommy, she's not clean." Yet this was nothing compared to the suffering of some of my hospitalist and ER colleagues. They lived in tents in their backyards rather than risk infecting their families. Which leads me to the guilt. There was a lot of guilt. Hospitals put in place policies to preserve the protective equipment and said that only one doctor per day, such as the attending, could use the upper gown and a mask to physically enter the patient's room. So specialists such as myself were just to use a video chat or a phone to evaluate the patient. This went against the basic integrity I had learned in my training over 20 years ago. I needed to obtain my own history and physical, lay hands on the patient. You were never to trust someone else's word or what was typed in a chart. I wasn't comfortable looking through a glass door for an evaluation, but we had never been through anything like this, and we had to think and act differently to deal with these new challenges. There was one patient I spoke to on the phone every day as he remained in the hospital dependent on high-flow oxygen. I didn't rush the visits. He had been isolated without visitors, like all the other patients with COVID, but he'd now spent weeks with only one or two people a day in hazmat suits coming anywhere near to him. I learned about his love, whom he had married relatively recently, later in life. I learned about his religious faith. I will never forget when he said to me, "I'm going to say a prayer for you tonight, Doc, because you sound a little depressed." The irony of his concern for me, from his state of severe illness and isolation, did move me to tears that day. And there were more tears too. Like twice during the holiday surge, when my patients were called to the hospital to receive their kidney transplant, they came in dancing because they had won the lottery with their organ match, and now their days of dialysis were over. However, for each of them, when their required COVID screen came back positive with asymptomatic infections, they were both abruptly sent home, only with the instructions to return to dialysis the following day. It was my transplant patients that we feared for the most when my 19-year-old decided he was going to join 60,000 of his closest friends for the George Floyd March on June 2nd. Although we were proud of him, we knew the crowds risked COVID transmission and that he could potentially infect our household and then my immunocompromised patients. But he said in the end that his decision was that he needed to be on the right side of history. And luckily, when we tested him 5 days after the march, he was negative. And that brings me to our current chapter in the story. As vaccines arrived late in 2020, we began to see that glimmer of hope for ending the pandemic. Yet that hope was tarnished by the persistent inequalities in vaccine distribution and access. And although it has been widely, objectively recognized that people of color in low socioeconomic areas have been disproportionately affected by the virus with worse outcomes, they also have had the least access to the vaccine. It was not until April 4th when the Biden administration directed the vaccine to dialysis units so that my most vulnerable and at-risk patients could receive protection, right after everyone age 16 and up in the state of Texas. So now we are at the COVID epilogue. What will we as a society learn from this story? A society where some have felt insulated by their wealth and privilege, yet we have found that we are all ultimately interconnected. If some have COVID and overrun the emergency rooms, then even the most privileged will not get care for their heart attack or appendicitis. We can be hopeful that future healthcare policy will acknowledge these inequalities and provide for more equitable healthcare and safety for all. And I have learned it's not enough to be a medical doctor. To be a true healer, one must also be a political activist with eyes open to social injustices, while continually fighting streams of disinformation. Listeners, get vaccinated, promote vaccination in your community, and keep the faith. Thank you.
Wow, Ruth, that was a powerful story.
Thank you so much.
I like what your son said about being on the right side of history. You mentioned about this inequity in the distribution of the vaccine. Are you seeing any improvement in that area?
Well, the first step is always to acknowledge the problem. So I am really pleased that that has become objectively, accepted and that people are working on it. There have been vaccine hubs set up in the Third Ward and Texas Southern University. And so we are trying to address the problem. But even so, we have so much distrust from these communities that a lot of people are not interested in getting the vaccine. So we really need leaders within the communities to tell people within their community that they have been vaccinated and to recommend the vaccine. People need to see people that look like them talking about vaccination.
Exactly.
Ruth, I'm really curious about the people that the physicians that chose to kind of distance themselves and maybe hand off some of their caseload. Have they come back? What's happened in the medical community?
Yes, Michael, I think that particularly as we've seen that it's not so much a touch contamination, but more of a spread through hanging out with people without masks, mm-hmm. People did end up coming back to the hospital. And of course, now we're in the era that all the medical providers have been vaccinated, and the vaccine is excellent. I mean, the vaccine efficacy really is 100% at preventing hospitalization and death. So it's given people a lot more comfort to care for these patients.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it must have been like. You say suddenly there's a shortage of doctors because so many aren't coming in, and you have this incredible influx of patients. I don't know how you did it.
Well, we were certainly a lot luckier in the Texas Medical Center than places like New York and Los Angeles and Italy. Mm-hmm. So we're grateful for that.
Right. At least so far.
Right.
Well, do you have anything to say directly to our listeners, to folks who might be hesitant about getting vaccinated?
Yes, I think it's important to be honest about the vaccine. You know, the vaccine does have potential side effects. Some people, yes, have no side effects, but oftentimes people do get a sore arm, or people even feel as if they have the flu. But these side effects last 1 or 2 days, and you can just take it easy and take some Tylenol, and you can know that you're going to feel better. It will not last. But if you get COVID, then all bets are off. You know, you could have long-term side effects, or you could even die. Or if you are asymptomatic, you could pass it on to someone else who could have long-term side effects or die. So, you know, I think when you look at it that way, it's a pretty easy calculus to choose getting the vaccine.
Sure. Well, Ruth, before we let you go, I want to ask you, as a doctor and a mother, what is the most important piece of advice you can give our listeners to help us get through this crazy time?
Eric, I think it's gratitude. I think the pandemic has brought us all a new perspective. Maybe in 2019, you know, we were agitated because we couldn't quite get something we wanted. Maybe it was something material. Maybe it was some form of status we were trying to achieve. And I think after 2020, we've all learned that, it's more the little things and the basic things that are important. And just to live in gratitude for our health and those we love, and just having the basic needs. And I think we'll all be happier and more concerned for each other and a better society if we can keep that perspective.
Okay, well, thanks for your sentiments, Ruth. We really enjoyed your story and your thoughts on this whole thing. And thanks for being our guest on So What's Your Story?
Thank you for the privilege, Eric and Michael. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, there's just something reassuring about Ruth's voice. While I was listening to her story there, I just felt like yeah, we're going to get through this. Well, we're going to take a break from our stories here for station identification and to make a few announcements. You're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM, community radio in Houston. And here is what's going on in the world of storytelling in the Houston area. First of all, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild at HoustonStorytellers.org, meets the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Until the pandemic is over, they're meeting on Zoom conferences, and the next meeting will be April 27th, next week. So go to their website at HoustonStorytellers.org. For more information. While you're on that same site, click on the tab Radio Program, and a page will appear with all of the archived programs of our own show, So What's Your Story, dating all the way back to 2008. And remember, we're not only broadcast on the radio, you can live stream us every Thursday at 8 p.m. on kpft.org. Our Facebook page is called So What's Your Story. We're also on YouTube, and we're always 100% non-commercial, so you won't see any ads or cookies. Also, we're a very interactive program, so if you have any suggestions or comments, requests for guests, anything you want to tell us, drop us an email at story@kpft.org. And don't forget our friends at The Moth, who have monthly story slams. Usually they're at Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of every month. But during this pandemic, they're featuring some great virtual story slams. So check them out at themoth.org. And to take your storytelling skills to the next level, why not join the Tejas Storytelling Association or the National Storytelling Network? Okay, let's get back to our show. This is your host, Eric Heen, along with co-host, Dr. Michael Winters. And tonight, we're hearing stories from people who have jobs where they've really had to step up to face the challenges of the pandemic. And our next guest will be Treva Mott, who's also been on this show before. Treva is a member of the HPD, and a big part of her particular job there is she does a lot of work helping at-risk youth. So, Treva, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Very good. Refresh our memories here a little bit, Treva. Aren't you involved in like the public relations department with the HPD?
Yes, I am. I'm with the Houston Police Department Public Affairs.
And last time you were on our program, you told some very inspiring stories about police life, but things have changed a little bit. That's been a couple years ago. Now we've had this big pandemic hit. So does the pandemic make the job of a police officer a lot more challenging?
I would most definitely say yes, meaning for us to be a little bit more safer as it relates to our health, meaning we have to now wear this mask, which can cause a distraction when we're on scenes. But it has taken a different way of policing, you know, not the regular way. And when I say that, meaning it's easier, you know, when we were pre-COVID, we would handle a scene a certain way. We knew exactly what we were going to. And now when officers go to a scene, it have to be read or used to prior to the state opening again, to whereas it would read, yes, the person had COVID, no, the person had COVID. But now we approach every scene as if the person have COVID, meaning for us to take precautions.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a whole new ball game, disrupt everything, but it's something you got to do, I guess.
Absolutely.
So tell us some stories. Tell us about what's been going on with you and the HPD since the COVID hit.
Well, I tell you, being a part of the TAPS, like I mentioned the last time, working with at-risk youth, Teen and Police Service Academy, and teaching the students, we now teach from Zoom, or shall I say virtual. And sometimes it can be very challenging as it relates to getting the students engaged. When talking to some of the school administrators, they'll say, well, you know, we've noticed that there has been, the grades have been going down. And being law enforcement, we're like, okay, well, how and what can we do to get these students engaged? And even though we're going in talking about different topics, different subjects, then we have to make sure that we're engaging, asking questions, getting them more involved. But it's more challenging, I would say. It's still challenging because sometimes officers, we like that hands-on, meaning we like that face-to-face. We want to see the expressions of the students. We want them to see our expressions. We want to be able to answer any questions that they may have. But being virtual, the students are more reluctant to ask questions. They kind of just, mm-hmm. you know, sit. And then we don't get to see their beautiful faces. All we see mm-hmm. are their initials. So it's been challenging in that area with meetings, presentations. So it's been different.
Yes. Have any specific incidents, any calls that you've been on or that you know of officers who have been on that you could tell us about how it's different with COVID?
Well, you know what? Let me make this comment. You know, I did have a class this morning with some high school students, and we were going to talk about a whole new different topic. But because of what's going on in the news today, the students wanted to know about what went wrong during those traffic stops. What could they have done differently?
Sure.
So it's almost as if, you know, we want to definitely stay on topic, but at the same time, be engaging to those students. So hopefully I'm answering your question the way you're asking it, but they're wanting to know what's going on. What happened? Why did this happen? We had one student when we watched the video that was released of the lieutenant being pulled over at the gas station by the two officers. So my question to those students were, how did that make you feel to see that? And the young lady, the one student that answered, one of the students that answered, she was literally in tears. And she was saying how afraid she is of law enforcement. Right. And that kind of, it saddened me to know that, I mean, she was in tears, literally afraid. She said, I have brothers, I have uncles, and me even. And what do we do? What do we do during a traffic stop? You know, so it's just so disheartening to hear that our youth are afraid because of what they're seeing in real life and what's going on with law enforcement. Yeah. So being in the position that I'm in, working with TAPS, the basis that we're founded on is to close the social distance between at-risk youth and law enforcement. And now is to close the social distance with youth, with the community, for them to get a better understanding of what our job is. But yeah, I'm telling you, Eric, that just saddened me so to listen. I almost started crying while teaching class this morning. Oh my gosh.
So you're the liaison between these police officers these kids see. Does that really put you on the hot seat there?
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does. I tell you, because we have to let them know that, hey, when we take this uniform off, we're citizens just like they are. And we get pulled over by the police as well. If we're committing a violation, a traffic violation, if we're speeding, if we ran that stop sign or that stoplight, we get pulled over as well. And what our job to do is to tell the students, tell the citizens that we have to act appropriately. And that's why we teach them how we have presentations as to where we tell them how to interact with the police during a traffic stop. And you know what's interesting, this morning in the class, the students were really asking some interesting questions and their comments on what they had seen. They were looking at it now, you know, wow, I can understand it from the citizen's perspective, also can understand it from the officer's perspective. So they weren't taking sides, they were actually looking at it from an objective perspective. And that's what made me feel really good to know that they are paying attention with what's really going on. One of the hot topics that we have talked about or taught in TAPS was human trafficking. I know that's a whole new different topic, but the students are very engaging when you talk about things that can possibly affect them,
making them
more aware of their surroundings. And then one young lady commented when we were on the topic, well, gosh, I'm afraid to go out of my door. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go outside. And it's like, no, it's not for you to be afraid because of the possibility of what can happen. It's for you to be aware of your surroundings and take it from a safety perspective. So yes, again, you know, this is enabling us as law enforcement to really sit down and let everything be a teachable moment and not for them to be afraid.
Right. Seems like it's a never-ending challenge because there's always something in the news coming up.
Yes, because we see everywhere on the back of cartons, on posters, have you seen or missing since this date? You know, we have the Amber Alerts, you know, so it's very tough out there. And, you know, enlightening the students to let them know that and the public in general, a lot of times when you say human trafficking, you think of sex exploitation, but you don't think of labor. Or you don't think of organ exploitation. So we were able to get a little bit deeper than what some of the students knew about, what the public knew about.
You know, when I was a kid, Treva, it seemed like I was kind of insulated from all this. I mean, there'd be the news on TV, but nowadays with social media, it seems like it's up in everybody's face. Does that make a difference, do you think?
Almost definitely. And again, being on the law enforcement side, we have to stay updated with the social media, with the news, what's going on with our agency, our department, meaning we have to be able to debunk some of the myths that are out there, especially as it relates to the body-worn camera. When they say something, see something that's police-related, then they're, oh my gosh, but did you see this? And did you see that? And it's like, but you know, there's always two sides to every story. you know, because sometimes social media, they're going to tell you the worst side of it to make one person or the other people look bad. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at it from another perspective, then it's like, oh, I didn't see that in that video. So it's just all about enlightening and not internalizing and taking things personal as law enforcement, but being able to understand things from the citizen's perspective, our perspective, and how we can approach it safely, and which makes for a better interaction with right. the citizens. And then sometimes we may not know the facts right off top. Uh-huh. We have to wait for the investigation to take place and then let the media or let the judges or the attorneys or whomever is going to explain it to us. Then sometimes we just have to sit back and wait, even though we think it's right in our face, plain view. Why do we have to sit up here and wait? It's right there on the camera. We clearly can see this. We clearly heard that. But sometimes it's a little bit more to it than that. Let me recap the one about the pandemic and is it taking a toll, or how is it taking a toll on police officers? I can speak from personal experience. It definitely, you feel more confined. You feel like you have to approach, you know, you can't really, you know, when citizens want to come up to you and shake your hand or ask you a question, you're more reluctant, like, oh, backing up. And they're like, I just want to ask a question. And uh-huh. you're like, oh, but the pandemic, and, you know, it's not you, it could be me. But when talking to coworkers, and we're sharing how it's affecting us, not only personally, not only business-wise or in our professional life, but also the toll that it's taking on our families. Because, you know, we have to keep in mind, we have the policing, which is changing because of the pandemic. And then we have our home lives that we have to go into. And, you know, we have to deal with our family not being able, or at that particular time, not being able to go outside. And if you do go outside, you have to have your face covered, your hands covered. Don't touch this. Don't touch that. You know, and don't be around big crowds. And now that it's opening up again, some officers are reluctant to, or shall I say me, still kind of reluctant to go out in public and wanting to be around people. So it's, you know, you definitely want to keep your mask on. Some people are taking their masks off when you go out in public. And it's like, oh my gosh. So it's kind of, it all depends on that individual, but definitely you can see that it is, I don't want to say taking a toll, but it does is definitely having an effect on us. And I know on me, you know, if you think of it this way, say for example, if an officer goes to work, they happen to get into a tussle, they have their mask on, happen to get into a tussle with a citizen for whatever reason, and their mask is yanked off their face, now they're exposed. Yeah. Do you go home and hug your kids, kiss your wife, go home, hug your kids, kiss your husband? Do you even want to expose them to what you've just been exposed to? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you still think about that today.
Sure.
You know, it's a lot going on in your mind because we have officers that are so much so very family oriented.
Well, Treva, thank you so much. We really appreciate your narratives that you've given us this evening. And do you have any final words for our listeners on behalf of the HPD?
Most definitely. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me on your show. It was a pleasure. It was fun. And as always, coming from law enforcement, a law enforcement perspective, always stay safe. And if at any given time you feel that you need to call 911, please do not hesitate. Please know that we are here for you and we understand.
And thank you for those sentiments, Treva. And you stay safe out there.
I definitely will. And you stay safe as well.
Definitely will.
Our next guest is really an artist of all kinds. She does song, dance, but she's really best known probably as a bilingual improviser, stand-up comedian, and comedy writer. In fact, she got the Grown Up Storytime Award for the wildest story of season 13, which was 2020. So she knows a lot about stories. Her name is Astrid Lange, and her day job is at a middle school where she does some teaching, some administration. She does a whole lot of things. So you'll get the sense that she has her hands in a lot of different things. She's very versatile. And she has some stories to tell us about her experiences during COVID. So Astrid, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
we're really interested to hear some of your stories. So I think you should just jump right in and tell us a story or two.
Okay. Well, these really all involve students in some form or fashion. When the pandemic and the lockdown and quarantine first happened, I was not working at the middle school. I was working for the Partnership for the Advancement and Immersion of Refugees here in Houston as the global program scholar coordinator. And that involved going to some high schools in Houston pre-pandemic and visiting with students who were refugees, officially accepted into the country, but refugees with very low English that were in their last year or so of high school, looking to graduate, but also needed to learn more English and learn how things work here, you know, stuff like how to take the bus, how to apply for a job, and which already was interesting and a little bit challenging pre-pandemic. And once the lockdown happened, it was during the time when it was March. So that's when graduation requirements really kicked into high gear. You know, if they hadn't passed standardized testing, trying to work with them online when a lot of these kids also did not have computers at home or internet presented a huge challenge. And the folks at Pair Houston and also entities like Comcast just worked their butts off. And the drive and dedication of these students was incredible. They all graduated, even though they weren't able to have a graduation ceremony. Teachers pulled together and had a car parade where they could honk. But to be able to go and knock on their doors at home and take some graduation photos, socially distanced, of course, and see how proud their families were was one of the most amazing things, even during this pandemic, and knowing what they'd gone through just to get here.
Astrid, these kids were all refugees, you said?
Yes. There was a couple of kids from Syria, some from different African nations that had gone through just amazing travels and been in refugee camps overseas. We have a couple, a few from Latin America, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. And one of the other things that we did was help find them scholarship opportunities. A lot of that involved essay writing. And to read the stories that they wrote about their experience is deeply impactful.
Sounds like it. Okay. So Astrid, those were really powerful stories. Wondering if you have any, short story of just really powerful that you'd like to leave our listeners with.
When I was talking about some of the online students jumping in to help, this happened just last week in my sixth grade class, where I've got students in person and students online simultaneously. And I noticed that I had a new student on my roster that I wasn't sure if they were in person or if they were virtual, didn't know. And we always have our classes on Teams, which is like Zoom in a sense. But as we were going through the lesson, all of a sudden this new name pops up in the chat. And I said, oh, hey, welcome. It's good to see you. You're new. And I'm designing your teacher. And then in Spanish, there's this little reply a few seconds later that says, no, I don't think so. And I said, well, and I'm typing this in and kind of talking at the same time. I said, well, I think so. You're on my roster. So therefore you're in my class. And they're like, no, I don't think so. And I said, okay. And then it said, yo no hablo inglés. I don't speak English. And I was like, oh, okay, no importa. Yo hablo español, and I'm typing that in, you know. Todo está bien. ¿Dónde estás? Because I figured this kid's online. He's not sitting here in the library with me. And he says, yo no sé dónde estoy. And it's like, well, you don't know where you are? All right, well, let's work with that. And so I'm starting to type in Spanish. And as I'm doing that, two of my kids at home in their houses are suddenly typing in Spanish as well, like, yo puedo ayudarte, I can help you, I speak Spanish, I can help you, and they're typing in all caps, and And we're all going, where are you? And he said, I'm at the school. And we're like, where? The thing is, when you're running a school, you need to know where all your kids are. And he said, oh, I'm in this classroom. And at that point, you know, I'm looking around and going, David, or whoever, Mateo, go down the hall, like, find this kid. And the kids at home are still typing. And he's like, you don't say. And we find this kid, and it was his first day on campus, and he wasn't sure where to go and totally confused. And I'm so glad we found him. But at the same time, those kids that offered to help him are his best friends right now. And he's an awesome kid, so motivated and just happy to be in class. And it's actually pretty interesting, but it was quite the thing to try to run down the hall and figure out where this child was.
He knew how to get online, and he was in the building. He just didn't know where you were physically.
No, yeah, exactly. And he thought he wasn't in my class because, for whatever reason, as kids might decide.
Yeah, great. So, Astrid, I really appreciate your being here. Anybody special you want to say hi to while we're on the air?
Of course, absolutely. All my students at Wells Middle School, or the middle school where I'm at, 6th graders, 8th graders, the 7th graders in the cafeteria. Definitely love all you guys. The students from Pierre Houston that graduated in 2020, y'all are amazing, and I can't wait to see the good that you do in the world.
Well, that's great. I'm sure they will be thrilled to hear from you, and really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much, Astrid.
Thank you.
Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. We'd like to thank our guests, Joe Sullivan, Ruth Wentz, Treva Mott, and Astrid Lang, for their great stories about the challenges they're facing during this pandemic. And don't you dare move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday life. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Eric Heen and Michael Winters, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
KPFT makes a difference with real people, real stories, and real voices.
I was put in a room where I was hung by my arms. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't rest, all the time with a bag over my head.
Whether it's hearing music that opens your mind or radio that stirs your soul, you know you can count on KPFT to bring you the stories and the people behind the stories.
The Shock Doctrine. What I'm calling the Shock Doctrine is a philosophy of power. It's a doctrine of domination.
This is radio worth supporting, and you make a difference. Visit kpft.org to view our complete program schedule. Give feedback on our shows or pledge online. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Most of us like to be out of the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equals healthy fun in the